The next item on the agenda, or items on the agenda, we're taking those in all three in a row. Is that what's the plan? Okay. Item number 7, Ben Weaver, 09-0244, Betty Walker, 09-0245, and Arnold Farber, 09-243. Mr. Madden.
As you just mentioned, Mr. Commissioner, while these are three separate projects, staff felt that with your permission, Mr. Bowman, such that they are immediately adjacent to each other, I could brief all of them together.
Fine.
All right, sir.
As long as the circumstances are pretty much identical.
I think you'll find a clear line between that, sir.
Please.
I would like to, at this time, make note of a little housekeeping matter. I inaccurately identified the breakwaters as being 9 feet wide. They are, in fact, 7 feet wide, gentlemen. I'd like the record to reflect that.
So noted.
Thank you. Let me explain that. Arnold Farber, I'll use this as an example, requests authorization to install 7 precast concrete breakwater units, creating a 7 foot wide by 57-foot long breakwater position, 105-feet channelward of an existing upland bulkhead adjacent to the western shore of the Chesapeake Bay in Northumberland County.
Please mention all three during the course.
Yes, sir. The second project of similar design, if not identical, is Mr. Ben Weaver. He is requesting the same design altogether, and Betty Walker. Staff would appreciate it, and we think it appropriate that the commission act on each of them separately. The projects are located on the Northumberland County along the western shore of the Chesapeake Bay, between the Potomac to the north and the Great Wicomico River to the south. The project is located in the Chesapeake Beach subdivision, located approximately 5 miles east of the town of Reedville. That's the project location. This is a well-established bungalow community. I believe it may have been one of the first in Northumberland County. The community is located immediately south of the confluence of Owens Pond and the Chesapeake Bay. I would like to direct your attention to the numerous groins along these properties, bordering Beach Road and the bay. This is the subdivision right here. This is the association has a large beach here, and the waterfront homes run along Beach Road, which extends down to about this location here. And you'll note that there's quite a number of groins, and a great many, if not all, of the properties on that shoreline are hardened. The red circle describes the location of the three properties. I intend to present the three projects from south to north, beginning with Arnold Farber, followed by Betty Walker, and finally with Ben Weaver. Mr. Farber is the southernmost of the three property owners. He owns an undeveloped bayfront lot here, seen in red. Mr. Farber's vacation home is on a separate upland parcel across Beach Road at the corner of Neal and Beach Road. It is his home, I believe, right here. In years past, Mr. Farber graded his bayfront lot, seen here, this location here. He graded it and installed 80 feet of revetment. He also has a 50-foot-long bulkhead here that connects up to the property line that he shares with Ms. Betty Walker. Sometime after the construction of the bulkhead, this area was crowned with riprap. I will show those in the photographs a little later in my presentation. Together with his downstream neighbor, Mr. Cridlin, these gentlemen enjoy an 80-foot long beach. One other thing I want to note here is that before I move on is that Mr. Farber has also constructed an 80-foot long groin, which appears to be in good condition. Betty Walker's property is immediately north and adjacent to Arnold Farber's, here seen in green. Ms. Walker's property is located east of Beach Road. Her cottage is perched atop a bank which averages approximately 10 feet high. If I'm not mistaken, that's her home right there, a little cottage. One thing that Ms. Walker owns is this property here, which is an easement for the Chesapeake Beach Civic Club, so they can enjoy a beach on the south side of the subdivision. She has, as you can see from the drawing, a 60-foot groin and a 57-foot groin. The 57-foot groin, which you'll notice in a few moments, has been damaged by prior storms. The 60-foot groin appears to be in good working order. She has a 75-foot revetment that extends and is contiguous with the bulkhead section that's right here. There are steps that descend down to the beach. So revetment. The northernmost of the individuals is Mr. Ben Weaver. But before I go on, I'd like to also note that both the Farber property and the Walker property have an armored upland and functioning groins that trap enough sand to afford some additional protection to the properties by shifting the shore break from under the toe of the respective riprap structures out. You won't see this in Mr. Weaver's situation. Mr. Weaver has this piece of property here. I've depicted it in magenta. Let me move back. His cottage is perched atop a similar bank to that of Ms. Walker. However, he doesn't have the same advantages that his neighbors to the south have. Mr. Walker has a 75-foot long revetment, which is failing. I walked along it, noticed it's in pretty high relief, and many of the rocks are tumbling down, and I didn't notice any filter cloth behind it. This is what's proposed, and this is why we viewed them all together. The three property owners propose to install 57-foot long sections of breakwater, which you see here in this drawing, right here. The three breakwaters will be separated by a 36-foot gap here and a 60-foot gap here. When installed, the breakwater units will be in 4.5 feet of water. The groin on Mr. Farber's property, as well as the two groins on Ms. Walker's property, will be removed with the expectation that sand will migrate in behind the breakwater structures. I'd like to point out at this point that there is no beach nourishment proposed in the plan. This plan was also submitted without any supporting calculations which would have shed light on the rationale for the spacing of the structures, and their distance offshore. I'd like to direct your attention to the next two slides, which were not included in the original plans for the project, but I gleaned them from an email that Warren Beasy sent to me after the original. So these were not, that's why they don't have any date stamp on them. They were emailed to me. But these do show some of the typical characteristics of the hex box, and I'll go through them quickly. The breakwater units with a trademark name Hex Box are 8 foot long and 7 foot wide and range in height from 4 to 6 feet. The wall of the units are reinforced with synthetic fibers. And each unit has been subjected to 5,000 pounds per square inch of pressure during the fabrication process to increase their density. The resulting units weigh anywhere from 3.6 to 4.5 tons. These units are typically floated into place, and the knockout plugs, you'll see they're ported here, there's holes here, the knockout plugs are open, and the units are scuttled in place. I'll show you the next one, which shows three of them connected together. A typical three-unit structure is seen here. The units are keyed together by a tongue and groove system, which is a new development, right here, so they stay together as one unit. Another innovation is that the lateral movement is resisted by the incorporation of concrete pins, which extend down into the substrate. The structures are also placed on filter cloth. The terminal ends of the breakwater are secured by timber piles, which alert boaters to their presence. This is a typical cross-section of the structures. When installed, the top of the breakwaters will only be 1.5 feet above mean high water. Incidentally, this is where I got the... I scaled that off, and it turned out to be 9 feet wide, but anyway. One of the things that Dr. Veazey, Warren Veazey, is making a clear point in many of his documents to us is that, one, that the design costs less. The second is that they take up less footprint over state-owned submerged lands, and they're more cost-effective. Here is some aerial photographs, and where I am is right on the easement, on the Civic Club's easement, and I'm looking south. Here's Arnold Farber's property. The groin, and then he has this crescent-shaped area that's hardened. And if I'm not mistaken, his property line is right along these steps. You can see some groins continue down the beach. Now I've stepped over a little bit closer off the beach access, and I'm looking right straight across Arnold Farber's property. Substantial riprap revetment lined in this area and goes around to his crescent-shaped beach. Now what I've done is I've gone to the other side of the property, and now I'm looking directly north from the south side of Mr. Farber's property. And you can see the net flow of sand appears to be going from the Potomac down the beach, north to south. We're looking up toward Betty Walker's property. My next position, I'll be standing right about here. So here's Betty Walker's property. Here's the beach access. And there are the two cells. One cell is created by Mr. Farber's groin, which creates this beach here. Then the second cell is up here. You'll see that again in a moment. And there's Ms. Walker's groin operating there. Now I've moved forward and north. This is taken on a different day, so don't let the sun position in the sky throw you a bit. Here we are at the looking toward the north end of Ms. Walker's property. There's her second groin that I alluded to earlier as having been damaged. And now I will move up to this deck right here, and I'm going to look down on Arnold Farber's beach on Arnold Farber's stone because he doesn't have a beach. Here's Farber's property. It's Ben Weaver's property. I beg your pardon. This is Ben Weaver's property, furthest one north. And as you can see, even at moderately in mid-tide, he has no beach at all. Now I've stepped on the adjacent property owners to the north, and I'm looking straight down, all the way down the project, with Mr. Ben Weaver's project looking me right in the face here. The VIMS Center for Coastal Resource Management has commented that the existing groin fields along the reach of shoreline appear to be relatively effective in maintaining a beach, and you can see it here. I brought this slide back up to show that very thing. They recommend construction of a traditional breakwater system. They concur they have concerns over the longevity of patented concrete structures along the dynamic shoreline, which incidentally has a 24-mile fetch. At our request, another VIMS program was consulted. Mr. Scott Hardaway, a coastal geologist with the Shoreline Studies Program, put together a report, and the report's in your book. Mr. Hardaway reported on some of the historical, some of the history of shoreline hardening in the Chesapeake Bay region, but Mr. Hardaway concluded, among other things, that the precast units appear to be less successful due to the inappropriate siting and the lack of sand nourishment behind the breakwaters. And I will stress the point that no sand has been recommended or proposed. No sand nourishment is proposed in these structures. He also noted that the proximity to hex boxes did not, the porosity of the hex box designs may have trouble developing and maintaining the necessary tombolas behind the breakwaters. During the review of the project, staff has noted that along the 6,600-foot-long beach from the mouth of Owens Pond down to Taskmaker's Creek, there appear to be 61 groins in various conditions which appear to be catching sand. Back to Mr. Hardaway's report. Mr. Hardaway concurs with his colleagues at the Center for Coastal Resource Management by noting that based on 30 years of VIMS research and observation, a properly designed and constructed riprap breakwater has demonstrated a high level of durability in a high-energy environment such as the one proposed here. As far as the staff's recommendation, it does not appear to staff that the proposed breakwater system conforms with the design recommendations described in the VIMS publication, Shoreline Management in Chesapeake Bay, which you have in black and white right there. Staff is sensitive to the applicant's desires to build up a beach in front of their respective properties. We understand that cement products are less expensive than typical breakwaters and that they cover less footprint. However, we share the concerns voiced by both the VIMS Shoreline Program and the Center for Coastal Resource Management over the deployment of these structures in this environment. It does not appear that to staff that the precast concrete units proposed along the applicant's shoreline conform with the criteria necessary to ensure a reasonable degree of success in the proposed environment. We believe that any breakwater structure be consistent with the design recommendations contained in the VIMS publication, which you have in front of you. That publication describes design criteria based on empirical evidence that suggests that there should be a proportional relationship between the spacing between the breakwater structures, their size, and distance from shore. Specifically, the guidelines state, we've heard this before in earlier presentations, specifically the design guidelines state that there needs to be a relationship between the maximum bay indentation and the gap between the breakwaters. Furthermore, the minimum beach width on high-energy sites such as these should be between 45 to 65 feet, with back shore elevations of at least 3 to 4 feet above mean high water. The summary report states that the breakwater should be 100 to 200 feet in length, with a crest elevation of 3 to 5 feet above mean high water. At sites such as these, none of the criteria appear to be met. Staff understands the applicants desire to build up the beach in front of their property, and also understand that the cement products are an alternative. We share the concerns expressed by VIM Shoreline and the CCRM program over the deployment of these structures. We're concerned that the structures are not able to withstand the forces applied upon them given their present configuration. Access to the shoreline does not appear to be restricted, and we believe a properly designed riprap breakwater with appropriate beach nourishment would provide better shoreline protection at these sites. If riprap breakwater isn't a good plan, each individual property owner could reinforce and provide better protection for their property by installing a higher class or a larger stone, rebuilding the groins and potentially filling those groins which have been devoid of sand for some time and pre-filling them to reduce the impact on the downstream property owner. I've tried to kind of compress all three together. I have a few people I'd like to announce. Dr. Ed Veazey is here, and Scott Hardaway is here, the author of the, as you heard before. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions, Mr. Madden? Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't see.
Would you repeat who the fetch that was these breakwater to endure again? You said 13 miles?
Oh, 24 miles.
24 miles, excuse me.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Further questions? Thanks, Jeff. Is the applicant here a representative? Who's, sorry. Solemnly swear the testimony that you will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, except God.
I do.
State your name, please.
My name is Ed Veazey, and I'm the president of Seaman Shoreline Systems.
Sir, can you stand in front of the mic, please?
Mic's
on the other side.
I'm sorry. Ed Veazey, V-E-A-Z-E-Y.
Okay.
Of Cement Shoreland Systems Incorporated.
Do you represent the applicants today?
My son is the one that did the work, but unfortunately, last
who
night
did the work?
No, he is representing them and did the engineering.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he couldn't be here today, so yesterday afternoon, I became a substitute.
Okay, I just want to make sure that they're speaking for, that you're speaking for them and not speaking as a representative of the company.
I said right. Yes, I'm sorry, I was just identifying myself. Yes, we represent Mr. Farber and Ms. Walker and Mr.
I am Mr. Farber.
Okay.
I'm here.
Well, that's okay. Proceed, sir.
He's the only one that's here.
Okay. Just want to make sure I've got...
And Mr. Weaver. And Mr. Weaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commission, for hearing this. Unfortunately, I said I couldn't, I'm not as familiar with the project, but Jeff has explained it very well, so I don't think I need to go into any more of that. He is certainly more knowledgeable than I at this point in time of this. What I'd like to do is to show you some examples of what we've done and how they apply in to this project. And the one that will be forthcoming, so maybe we'll only have to show it one time for 34 projects.
Would you like to bring up that?
Yes, I would. Eagle Bay in King George County. It's downriver from Fairview Beach. This shows a storm event and crashing against the breakwaters, and the calm water behind them, which hence protects the shore from the erosion and helps permit the buildup of sand in a naturally formed tombolo where there's enough sand available. Now, unfortunately, two of my major consultants couldn't be here either. One is Archimedes, who promised me that a rock won't float, but a concrete box will. And indeed, that's one of the beauties of our system, in that we can transport one-tenth of the mass of the rocks, saving a lot of diesel fuel and pollution and labor and traffic on the highways. And the installation is a lot easier, in that we can actually launch these in the water and float them in place. Mr. Mark Archimedes sends his regrets, but then there's one more consultant, and that was Sir Isaac Newton, and he told us that force is equal to mass times acceleration. And one characteristic of these boxes, these particular units are 4.5 tons, so it's like 9,000 pounds. But when filled with sand and water, they're much more massive. So they can resist the large waves. And in addition, because they are connected with the tongue and groove, and they're pinned to the earth, then their effective mass is very large. So even though they may not be as massive as a large stone breakwater, they do provide an integrated mass such that it would take a heck of a wave hitting dead on to make the move, because it's going to go along the line. So the forces are going to be shared by a large mass over a long distance. We've installed 5 units in the Chesapeake Bay and the Potomac River region since October of 06. They were first installed some in Northumberland County, and that was a fetch of over 25 miles. We have withstood some significant storms. The latest installation at Fairview Beach was in June of 2008. Now, I know Mr. Hardaway commented that some of the boxes are broken, and indeed they have. But just like the Navy's shifts from sail to steam to nuclear power, there are many a problem. And Mr. Hardaway did a wonderful job over 30 years, and they had really developed some common criteria. And we're sort of a new kid on the block, and it's taken us some time. But we've indeed implemented a lot of the points that have been brought up by VIMS and VMRC on the previous ones, and we think we've corrected most of them. Now, one was that we know at White Sands Harbor, we had a box design we used one time. It was designed by a civil engineer, a structural engineer, who worked for the precast concrete company. Unfortunately, his application was somehow wrong. They were 8 feet tall. They were taller, but they were thinner, and unfortunately didn't withstand the forces. Well, we learned from that mistake, and we are replacing all of that at cost. At White Sands Harbor. So you learn from your mistakes. Initially, our groins that we put in under the cement system were not connected, and there were recommendations made along the way that they be connected. We now do that. The boxes, and even rock, of course, and boxes will shift a little bit in a bottom depending upon the softness of a rock that might be under it, hard clay under it. And there is some differential sediment. That's to be expected. And that's one of the reasons for this loose connection of tongue and groove, because concrete is brittle. So we want it to flex some, such that it doesn't crack and break. Now, before we installed our precast concrete walls, the L walls that you've seen before, they are reinforced with steel. And we all know what steel does to concrete structures. Well, we have made some progress there in that we have now gone through in these boxes. Since there are not many stresses in setting it, because we set them in place and we float them in there and we sink them. And once they're in the water, there are very few stresses. But there's no steel in there to corrode with a crack and rust and blow the concrete apart. So we're increasing the longevity. And longevity is one thing that's not done. Wouldn't 500 pounds of pressure, it's actually 500 PSI concrete. That's the design strength of the concrete. Whereas the concrete in a basement is maybe 2,500 to 3,000 PSI. This is double. It's 5,000 PSI. It's similar to bridge-grade concrete used by VDOT.
Sir, can you tell me why this design and your product is good for this project? That's what I'm really very much interested in as far as what it can do to accomplish the desired.
So let me speed through this.
Please do.
This is the design of the box. Jeff has already pointed out the concrete pins and the tongue and groove on the two sides. The same one that Jeff showed, I won't go into more detail. Except to point out that this is a 0.3 ratio, and it's about the same, I'm told, as the water flowing through a riprap breakwater, a stone breakwater. It's the same penetration. And one of the reasons was that we put these in there, by the way, was because it had been commented that, you know, this is a flat wall reflects the water. So we wanted some absorption of that force and lens reflection. That just compares with the amount of subaqueous bottom that's covered with that versus this is 7 feet wide. Actually, less because the text box is taper, so there's less covering of the bottom. These are some boxes. Matter of fact, Jeff, that's the first one that you saw in front of my son's house 15 years ago, right there, and it's still there, hasn't moved, and it's been growing natural recruitment of subaquatic vegetation and emergent vegetation. And this also show. This is one in front of Eagle Bay, and again, natural recruitment of vegetation within. It's like a nursery, in that some of the vegetation is protected from the big waves. There are some oysters that are growing at. I think that was the White Sands Harbor, and there's a professor, by the way, at Louisiana State University that's got an additive to put to concrete that will help the recruitment of oysters, which may be of interest to VMRC and the VIMS. And Dr. Biney down there, we come up and visit us. We may talk about the staff sometime later. This is the installation showing putting the flatbed truck into the water, floating them in place and sinking them, and then lastly hammering down the concrete pins to alleviate the problem of shifting. This is White Sands Harbor before. This is where we put the rectangular boxes initially that had problems with cracking and breaking, which we are replacing over time, and eventually they will probably all replace. We'll never use those anymore. There are always some slips, and we hopefully we correct them, and we learn by the science, and we perfect it, just like Mr. Hardaway has perfected this system over a 30-year period. That shows them installed down there, and that shows it today. We have tombolos that have formed, or salients in this particular case, and we have grown the beach back from what it was, and it has improved the White Sands Harbor community beach. This shows the hex water being taken into position on the Potomac going up to north of the Potomac River Bridge. This is where the property was sloughing off. This is an installation at Eagle Bay. You can see how we used a barge in this particular case. And this is the last project that we'll be talking about is Mr. Bouvier's project, and this is the one that you permitted from Mr. Fowler's some years ago. This was before installation. There's the process of getting them in the water, and you can see the contour of the beach here, and now you can see the contour of the beach that's built up behind them. There's salients there, here, and a little bit behind this upriver one. This is upriver, that's downriver. And this is only 500 feet below Mr. Bouvier's, and we'll talk about it in the next presentation after these three. This is Stratford Harbor. This is what it looked like before, because all when the material
was... Mr. Vasey, I am convinced at this juncture that this is a good product. I really am. I need you to please concentrate your comments on the projects that are before the commission at the present time. Time is of the essence, sir, and there's no doubt that you believe very strongly in this, but I need you to please direct your attention to the applications that have been put before the commission.
This illustrates that even with no sand being supplied, artificially nourished, that they can build up, and this is a fetch that could be... used. This is at Stratford Harbor. It's a large fetch. It does work, and it could work in the current project in building up sand where those groins are. There are no groins in this place, but it has worked. And this is the location up and down the river, down at Heathsville, at White Sands Harbor, all the way up to Fairview Beach. Now, as far as this project is concerned, I understand there's Mr. Harvey's got some concerns about it, but I wanted to show you that they can work without nourishment. We have improved the product such that it has met previous concerns. We think they're strong enough now. By the way, the ones that did break at Fairview Beach were broken because the contractor dropped them when he was pulling down. And we put them in place broken until we could get some new ones precast and cured, and they're to be put in place here shortly. So we think we've solved a lot of the problems and also some of the handling problems. We feel that they do work. They provide the mass. We feel that in these three projects that we have before us right now, we believe that they will work. Now, I think Mr. Hardaway's got some good points, and Mr. Madden, that perhaps there are not the exact right spacing. But I know my son must have been somewhat constrained by their properties. Their properties are of different width, and then there's a access to the beach through there that has to be allowed for. And you can't, I guess it was a reason you can't not put the breakwaters right in front of their access to the beach. So the gaps are not exactly as they might be. So hopefully that will not make that much difference. And I know there's a concern that perhaps had them a little closer inshore, maybe they would be a little higher and a little higher above mean high water. And we're certainly willing. I talked to Mr. Barber, and they're willing to do, make some adjustments in that with advice from VIMS and DMRC. And also, although sand, as Jeff pointed out, is not in the re-nourishment. There is, as Mr. Barber will probably show in pictures, it's a big riprap above. It would be very difficult to get sand there, but maybe we can come up with it. But he said that if that is what the commission would want, then we could do some sand re-nourishment as well. One of the bottom lines is, I guess, it's Virginia Institute of Marine Science. Now, this is not a science. We have sort of done some of this with the advice of engineers. But we're looking for help. We would like to cooperate with VIMS and VMRC to make this project better, just because I think it is proven more cost-effective for homeowners to do it this way. It can be as little as one-third of the cost. And it's flexible also. We believe that it covers less subaqueous bottom of the state. We believe that it's more flexible than that. If we had to relocate, wanted to relocate them, it's a lot easier, and my son and I have done it ourselves, just the two of us. We have gone out at low tide with the box float out of the water, and then pumped the water out, plugged up. These didn't have holes in them, but we plugged up these holes. We can refloat these boxes and relocate them. Just before Isabel came through, we physically moved a 13-ton box upriver about 100 yards of Eagle Bay just by pushing it at slack water, and sunk it 2 weeks before Isabel, and we've had two of them there. And they only moved about 6 inches, and they didn't even really fill with any sand. So we think that we're giving people a product that is massive in accordance with Newton laws. It should last long. It's in a natural substance that won't pollute the marine environment. It's sand and gravel and limestone. Its prenatal condition and its postmortem condition is a natural substance that cannot harm the environment. So we believe that this new technique, with some help from VIMS and improving the science, can make it better for all of the citizens of Virginia that live on the waterfront. We want to cooperate. We want to try to make it better. We want to serve the people and the environment with this product.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Beasley? Thank you, sir. The applicant wishes to be heard. Come forward. As long as we're a testament, you're about to give me the truth, the whole truth, and the truth of God.
I do.
State your name, please.
I'm Arnold Farber. I'm the landowner, one of the three. And you guys have been through a lot today, so I'm going to cut this really short. I do have some pictures that show similar to what Jeff showed. My one comment about the pictures, that overhead aerial pictures that were shown of the beach area, I do feel like those pictures are very old. If you look at that beach today, if there was an aerial picture of it, you would see since Isabel, virtually all of those beaches have been reduced to a very few feet. And in Jeff's current pictures, when he showed my property line, you notice that there was no sand in front of my bulkhead at all. There was no sand in front of Ben Weaver's bulkhead at all. Most of those beaches in that whole stretch, 6,600 feet, have no beaches left whatsoever. We have lost all of that sand. I've got some pictures with me. I'm not going to show them. They just slow you down. But it shows that a drop of over 7 feet in front of my bulkhead, where I have in 2008, my grandson standing on the bulkhead or on the sand with about a 2 foot drop. And then in 2009, right now, there's over a 7 foot drop. So we've lost all that sand. And there are some jetties that have been damaged in all the different storms, and that contributes to some of the loss. But the problem is that so much sand has been washed out of there that the new jetties. And in December of 2009, just a few months ago, my neighbor to the right of me put in a brand new jetty. It was in 1 month, and it washed out because there's not enough sand in that area any longer to hold the jetties. And what's happening is there's a clay bottom, and the jetties will not hold in this clay bottom. So since we've lost so much sand, the clay is our alternative. The jetties are not holding. That's why the jetties are breaking up. So what I'd like to say is we're looking at this as an alternative to try, and that's the whole thing. We went to the Wetlands Board. They looked at it. They decided it wasn't in their jurisdiction, but they said it did seem like an alternative to try. The Army Corps of Engineers approved this last April. They said that as far as they were concerned, we could go ahead with this. All the adjacent landowners in this area have been notified of this project. There are no protests listed at all. The Civic Club Association that is associated with our organization there, where we have all these cottages, is aware of this project. They have the adjacent easement to that beach. They have no objection to it. And what we're looking to do is try this. I mean, it's an experiment. We're putting out our money. And hopefully it will enable us to build up some beach area. And if it doesn't work, we'll have to go back and do something else. But at least it's an effort to do something. Right now, and I think in your last project thing, it was stated that beaches are good. They're few and far between on the Bay Area or in this area, and we're trying to maintain this beach. It was a beautiful beach. I've got a picture of it in 1980. We had almost 100 foot of sand out in front of this, and now it's all gone. So that's what we're trying to do. I appreciate your consideration, and thank you very much.
Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you very much, sir. Anyone else in support of the project? Anyone here in opposition to the project? That is before the commission for discussion and action.
I guess we want to hear from Mr. Hardaway again.
Okay, Mr. Hardaway, Mr. Fox, Mr. Hill, what you got to say about the project? The previous one.
Hello again.
Mr. Hardaway, Farber just said that the sand is washed away, and when one of his neighbors put in a groin, that the groin didn't hold, didn't work because they're down to the clay or whatever down there. But historically, these groins have worked very well, apparently. Why would we be thinking about an offshore breakwater system if the groins have been working? And if we're thinking of offshore breakwater system, would you recommend the normal rock system versus the cement product system in this application?
Right. Jeff?
Yeah.
Can you get the aerial? In this particular application, I think it's instructive to possibly look at the reason, the evolution of the shoreline through time. That helps us a lot figuring out what's going on. We saw the value of the last project. And I think the statement that they're out of sand is a statement for using sand in the system.
Okay.
Whether it's the one that shows the Owens Pond.
Owens Pond guy.
And the reason I want to show this is from a we've looked at a lot of shorelines over the years. And I think it's instructive to note the history, although we don't have all the aerials. Owens Pond was not a pond. Like it is now, it's more like a bay. This whole shoreline was connected. Okay? Back when they're talking about having all the sand, so there was a free flow of material along there. The groins worked great. At some point in time, I can't remember exactly for this particular, possibly before 94, this breached. And once she breached, she took off. So all the sand that was coming down the shoreline is now in Owens Pond. And that's one reason we're starved here. In fact, in Taskamaskus, this spit used to go out here in 1937. This is extremely dynamic shoreline. Very interesting. Geomorphic perspective. But nevertheless, and that is one reason that sand has been starved from the system, possibly causing the downcutting, loss of beach over a period of time. Once you harden the shorelines, you cut the shores of sand off. Once you put in groins, you start restricting that movement. So it becomes I'd use the word domino, but to some degree there's an effect over a period of time. In this particular case, let me just say, my hat's off to the VZs for their ingenuity and their go-to-itive to doing this, for trying to put these kinds of systems in. When I was asked to comment on them in general, my comments were for the broad application of breakwaters, and we brought in the empirical data, what works, you need to use some sand, you need to look at different kind of relationships. And so in evaluating these types of systems, that would be a way to begin looking at them. They're less massive. They're built in a whole sand. We're not really sure. The ones we saw with all the sand in them was coming from erosion of the bank up in Westmoreland County and filled right up over a period of time. But there are other areas where these have been put in. In a report I sent to the MRC, which shows that they've been in for a period of years, and the sand just went in the system so it didn't catch it. So whatever the breakwater component is, it needs beach fill. If we could just put beach fill along the shoreline and that would be it, would be great. But that's why we start putting in breakwater, so we have to put in groins. So in this case, at a minimum, I think this requires a significant amount of sand to be added to the breakwater system. And of course, I would say to back up that rock stone structures would be a preferable situation. But the beach fill to me is as critical as anything else.
Further questions? Mr. Robbins?
Well, just to back up a little further, some of the discussion here in the staff narrative talked about the demonstrated effectiveness historically of the groin fields. And then we heard that groin fields groins that were recently installed failed, but they failed structurally is my impression. So,
me here.
Right. And so would a simpler approach not be just a riprap groin type approach, and then have nourishment?
Rebuilding the groins with beach fill would be, I think, appropriate here. Because, the downcutting, the problem sometimes is when you have tried to drive piles into a hard bottom, you reach a point you can't drive it anymore, you cut it off. Sometimes it isn't driven far enough, and consequently failure can ensue. A rock's groin, properly built, properly based, would was served better than trying to replace the wooden ones, but there's obviously cost involved in that as well.
Further questions? Yes, sir, Mr. Becker.
The applicant called this an experiment, and at the same time, you say you mentioned you commend the VZs for their.
Sure.
And so, what is your. Is this really an experiment that we'd be embarking on?
Well, he showed quite a few of them they've had on the Potomac River. And I tried to, in response to some questions, I tried to look at them in an objective fashion. And they have, where there's some sand moving in, they seem to have captured some of it. And they seem to, some of them have held up. The ones that he was talking about in white sands, they got beat up pretty hard and they had to replace them. I think that, in my opinion, that they might serve better if actually had two rows of them sitting on a foundation of rock where it brings them up to the mass of wave attenuation and size of a rock break comparable to a rock break. I'm not sure I'm supposed to talk about those kind of things here, but in looking at this and what may make an improvement in them, that might be a way to do that. Experiment, you know, every site's a little different. We know what rocks, sand, and plants do. We've been looking at them for a few years. The ones that they put up on the Potomac, structurally, they're still there, but there's no sand in the system. So at what point do you put a system in and wait for sand to show up? I mean, really, that's what you do with the ones a lot. You know, you put them in and hope the sand shows up. And I think in some of those cases that they've already been put in there, where the sand hadn't showed up yet. So I never really said that you shouldn't use, should these things are not going to ever work. In fact, I think there's a time and a place for a lot of these things. And maybe a lesser environment might be good too. Wayfinding environment. But anyway, that's kind of my two cents on that.
But would you also call this an experiment?
I think there's, in the sense that there's only a few. And I would say that's an extension of an experiment they started, you know, 5 or 8 years ago.
Let me follow that up. See if my memory serves me correctly. After 18 years being here, Mr. Grab can refresh it if I'm off base. I seem to remember maybe the first time that these devices were introduced to the commission, it was basically introduced to the commission as an experiment. Is that correct? That is exactly the way, Mr. Grab. So those of y'all that think that I'm faltering, this will prove I am or not.
You're correct. When the commission approved some of these in the past, the selling point, if you will, was the fact that you have sections of shoreline that are inaccessible for the installation of rock structures. Either the shoreline's too steep, you can't get the equipment down there, or you can't get the barges inshore with the rocks. And as Mr. Vizi has said, the beauty of these, to a certain extent, is that they can be washed and floated down. And so the commission, I won't say endorsed, but approved several locations of installation where, in fact, the traditional structure could not be readily employed. But the commission has always maintained that, you know, given the two structures, our preference would be a traditional riprap structure. And while some people will utilize sand fill in order to gain access, quite frankly, to place the rock, the commission has also endorsed the filling of the structure because of the minimization of the downdrift, you know, properties. And that if you've got a sand abundance system, just about anything will collect sand. You could put a 57 Chevy on the side out there and it's going to collect sand, you know. But we believe that nourishment, as Scott has said, is a critical component of any properly designed structure. As he also indicated, these may be more appropriate in a slightly quiescent or less energy, you know, environment, as opposed to, you know, structure, because you do get differential settling. They're not, as he indicated, not placed on rock base. You might put footer clock down, but the structure, in spite of the pins, differentially settle, and the waves cause them to move, and they eventually, you know, aren't in the same configuration as when they were placed. But you're correct about the testing.
I don't mean to interrupt the thought flow. of the commission per se, but I just wanted the commission, especially those members that were not here, to be cognizant of the fact that when these first came before the commission, they were basically proffered as an experiment. And as I recall, some type of report was to be provided subject to that, which I have not seen, but that's neither here nor there. But Ed, in all due respect, I want to let you know that this would not be a first-time experiment or a prototype in which a knowledge that had not been worked upon could be gleaned from. But anyway, further questions? Matters before the commission for action.
Chairman.
Mr. Fox.
It seems to me that Mr. Hardaway has expressed his professional opinion that the sand drift is no longer there, and so probably replacing groins is simply not enough. But we do need to have sand nourishment of whatever we put in, and it would appear that given the 24-mile pitch, that you're going to have something substantial out there, such as a riprap breakwater, properly designed. And you've got the opportunity with three adjacent properties here to properly design a fairly significant system. And so I would recommend that the landowners consider such a system of breakwater, riprap, rock breakwaters with sand nourishment behind. And so I would move that we accept staff's recommendation to deny the application as it's presented.
Is there a second to the motion?
So moved.
Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much for your briefing. Next item on the agenda, Bob Bouvier, 09-0800.
Mr. Commissioner, I'm sorry. I just want to clarify, make sure that you intended that motion to represent all three of the cases.
Yes.
That's correct. Now, Mr. Granis, do you want us to vote on each one? We handle that real fast. Not a problem, just to make sure that we're straight.
My motion is to accept staff's recommendation on Ben Weaver's
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Next item, Betty Walker.
My motion is on Betty Walker's application to accept staff recommendation.
For second to the motion, second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Next item, Arnold Farber.
Motion on Arnold Farber's application is to accept staff recommendation.
For second to the motion. Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.